If I could only invest in 3 ETFs for the rest of my life, this would be it. In this video, I will show you which 3 ETFs to buy, how much to allocate at every stage of life, and why the standard allocation rules are completely wrong for Singapore investors. Let's get into it. So, the idea of a 3 ETF portfolio actually came from Jed Bogle, the founder of Vanguard and the Lin Pei of index investing. His idea was simple: home country stocks, international stocks, and bonds. That's it. With just these 3 ETFs, you get exposure to everything. Lower fees, easier rebalancing, and you will never have to overthink what to buy next. And that's important, because the hardest part of investing isn't picking the right ETFs. It is sticking with your plan when the market jibba-booms 30%. So first up, Global Stock Market ETF. For this, ACWD is the best option for Singapore investors right now. It has the lowest fees, highest liquidity, and with just this one fund, you get over 2,300 stocks across 47 countries. Basically, diversification gao gao. Now, some of you might be thinking, why not buy the S&P 500? It's been the best performing index over the last few decades. And you'll be right, but past performance doesn't guarantee future results. Let's rewind to the 2000s, which Wall Street calls the lost decade. From 2000 to 2009, the S&P 500 returned negative 1.36% annualized. If you put in $100,000 at the start, you will only have about $87,000 a decade later. Meanwhile, a global ETF would have returned a positive 1.65% annualized over the same period, turning the same $100,000 into about $118,000. It ain't much, but at least you wouldn't have lost money. While the US currently makes up about 63% of the world's stock market capitalization today, that hasn't always been the case. In the 1980s, Japan was the dominant market. And in the early 1900s, the UK was the world's largest stock market. So things change all the time. And that tells us that we have no way of knowing which country will do well over the next 20 to 30 years. Then there's also the whole concentration risk. Right now, 10 stocks make up over 40% of the S&P 500. So if big tech ever stumbles, oh ho, your entire portfolio would go down along with it. A global ETF like ACWD solves this. You still get plenty of US exposure, so you are not missing out. Plus, ACWD's top 10 is only about 24%. So you are not betting your entire retirement on whether Nvidia has a good quarter or not. In short, ACWD handles your growth. But with great growth comes great volatility. And when markets crash 30, 40 to 50%, you need something that doesn't crash with it. That brings us to the next ETF, bonds. For Singapore investors, you get a couple of options here. The first one is A35, the ABF Singapore Bond Index Fund. It holds government and quasi-government bonds, issuers like the Singapore government, HDB and LTA, which is about as safe as it gets. It yields around 2.34%. But if you want slightly higher yield, there's MBH, the Amoa SGD Investment Grade Corporate Bond ETF. Same idea, but instead of government bonds, it holds investment grade corporate bonds denominated in SGD. Slightly higher risk, but the yield is around 3.2%. Then there's Singapore Savings Bonds or SSB. Unlike A35 and MBH, SSBs are completely risk-free because it is guaranteed by the Singapore government. Plus, you can redeem anytime and get your money back by the following month with no penalty. Though, the current average yield is only about 1.99%. So each option has their own trade-offs and you have to decide which best fits your situation. But let's be honest, bond returns are not meant to be exciting. That's not the point. The point is crash protection. You won't care about bonds when the market is going up 20% a year. But when stocks drop 30%, that boring 2% will suddenly look a lot more attractive when everything else is in deep red. Now, if you want to start investing, you need to keep your costs low. That's why I use Interactive Brokers. With Interactive Brokers, you are paying just 35 cents per trade on the US stock market. That's one of the lowest in the industry. They also give you access to Ireland domiciled ETFs, which can save you a chunk of dividend withholding taxes. And if you're not sure what to invest in, they also have a bunch of free company research tools built right into the platform. So you can do your homework before putting your hard-earned money in. Check out my link in the description to get started. Alright, now back to the video. The third ETF is a Singapore stock market ETF. You have two options here: ES3, the Spider STI ETF, or G3B, the Amoa Singapore STI ETF. They are basically the same thing. Both track the Straits Time Index, which is the top 30 companies listed on the SGX. Why do some people add this? When Gard actually did a study on this, they call it home bias and found that holding around 25 to 60% in your home country's stocks can help to reduce the overall portfolio volatility. Then there's also the comforts of owning companies that we are familiar with, such as DBS, Singtel, and Capital Mall. You bank with them, you see their buildings every day, plus STI dividends are paid in Singapore dollars, so there's no FX risk. But here's why it is optional. Singapore makes up just 0.3% of the global stock market, and ACWD already includes that. So even a 10% allocation to the SDI means that you are overweighting Singapore by more than 30 times its actual market share. You are basically saying, hey, I think Singapore will outperform its weight in the global index, and maybe it will. But Elroy Dimson, the creator of UK's FTSE 100 index and the co-author of the definitive UBS Global Investment Returns Yearbook, argues that investors should avoid home bias. His reasoning is that we are already very exposed to our economy through our jobs, our property, and our retirement savings. So it makes more sense to diversify our investments to other markets rather than doubling down on the same country. Personally, I think ACWD plus a bond fund is enough for most people. If you want more Singapore exposure, STI is still a solid pick, but just know that you are making a deliberate bet. Now, some of you might be thinking, but what about REITs or growth stocks or individual companies that I believe in? Sure, and there's nothing wrong with that. What I've been describing so far is your core portfolio. ACWD plus bonds cover the whole market. It is boring, it's diversified, and it works. But if you want to, you can also add what's called a satellite allocation on top. This is a smaller portion of your portfolio, maybe 5%, maybe 20%, where you make more targeted bets. That could be a REIT ETF for more real estate exposure, a tech-heavy growth ETF if you believe in the sector, or even individual stocks of companies that you believe in. But the key rule is this: your core is the foundation of your portfolio, and it should make up 80 to 90% of your portfolio, whereas the satellite is just the extra on top. So even if your satellite bets go to zero, your retirement plan would still be on track. Alright, so you know the ETFs. Now the real question: how much should your money go into stocks versus bonds? Depending on who you ask, the answer can be different. The 100 minus your age rule says that a 30-year-old should hold 70% stocks, 30% bonds. Vanguard's target date funds start at 90% stocks and glide down to 30% by retirement. And then there's a 2024 study that says that you should just go 100% stocks. So who is right? Rather than telling you which rule to follow, let me show you what actually happens with each strategy. Here, I coded a web app that lets you compare all of these approaches side by side. The link is in the description. The dashboard has four built-in strategies. Conservative, where your bond allocation matches your age, so at 30, you will hold 30% bonds, at 50, 50% bonds, and so on. Moderate, which starts at 90% stocks and gradually shifts to bonds as you age. Aggressive, 100% stocks all the way through. And target date, which follows Vanguard's glide path. You can even create your own custom speed. What it does is run a Monte Carlo simulation based on the past 100 years of market data and shows you what your portfolio could realistically look like at retirement. The expected growth, the best case, the worst case, and how much you could lose in a crash. So let's say you are 30 years old now, contributing $1,000 a month, and you plan to retire at 65. With the conservative strategy, you could end up with about $1.8 million and could withdraw around $6,000 a month in retirement. The worst crash you will experience, about 31%. Yes, it is painful, but still survivable. Now, look at the aggressive strategy. You will end up with $2.6 million. That will give you about $8,000 a month. Sounds great, but in the worst year, your portfolio could drop by as much as 86%. That's seeing $2.2 million disappear. On paper, the aggressive strategy wins in terms of returns, but you will only win if you didn't panic sell at the bottom. And that's the trade-off. Higher returns always come with higher risk. There's no free lunch. The question isn't which strategy makes the most money. It is which strategy you can actually stick with when the market is crashing and every headline is telling you to sell. So go play around with it. The link is in the description and use it to find out which allocation lets you sleep best at night. Now, let me show you something interesting. Let's say I set the start age to 25 and retirement to 65. That's a 40-year investing window. The chart shows a smooth upward curve that gets steeper and steeper over time. By the time you retire at 65, you are at over $4 million. And notice how far the red line pulls away from the gray dashed line. That gap is pure compounding. That is the money that your money made. Now, change the start age to 45. Same $1,000 a month, same strategy. But the chart tops out at around $600,000. That's less than a fifth of what the 25-year-old ends up with. Compounding barely had time to work. That 20-year-old head start isn't just nice to have. It is worth over $3 million. But then, what if you're already 50? Is it too late to invest now? No. But the strategy changes. With the aggressive allocation, you could still get a decent median income. But look at the 10th percentile. It is dangerously close to what you actually put in. With only 15 years of investment, you will have a hard time of recovering from a bad sequence of returns. One crash in the wrong year and you are in trouble. Now switch over to the conservative allocation. The returns are lower now, but the band is also much tighter. So there's less risk of ending up with less than what you have put in. In other words, if you are starting late, taking on high risk may be risky. This means if you start early, you can afford to be aggressive to earn potential higher returns. But if you start late, you might need to be more conservative because time is the ultimate risk reducer. But with that being said, there's also one thing all of these rules don't account for. Most of these advice, the 100 minus age rule, the target date grad path, all of it comes from the US and Americans don't have the CPF. Meanwhile, the CPF special accounts earns 4% guaranteed. That's better than most bond ETFs. It is risk-free and backed by the Singapore government. What this means is that if you are 25-year-old with $40,000 in your CPF SA, you already have a $40,000 bond allocation. So in the dashboard, if you toggle the CPF SA layer on, ding, you will see a gold band stacked underneath your investment portfolio. And suddenly, even if your brokerage account is 100% stocks, your total wealth allocation might be something like 65% stocks and 35% fixed income, because CPF is your bond component. Then at 65, CPF Life starts giving you a guaranteed monthly income. That's another fixed income layer on top of everything else. This changes everything because of CPF. Singapore investors can now afford to be much more aggressive with their investment portfolio than what the textbook says. So putting it all together, here's a simple suggestion framework by age. If you're in your 20s and 30s, you could go 100% ACWD because your CPF SA is your bond allocation. Then in your 40s, you could continue to stay at 100% ACWD if you can handle the volatility. Otherwise, you could shift to 90% stocks, 10% bond allocation. Your CPF SA is growing at 4%, so your overall allocation is still balanced. In your 50s, you could shift to 80-20. At this point, a 30% crash on a $500,000 portfolio would mean $150,000 gone. That's a lot harder to stomach when retirement is just 10 to 15 years away. So having some bonds in your portfolio gives you that cushion. Finally, in your 60s and beyond, it depends on your CPF Life payout. If it covers your basic expenses, you can continue to stay aggressive. If not, you might want to allocate 20 to 30% to bonds as a liquid buffer for all your essentials like medical bills, travel, and emergencies. Remember, you can't withdraw your CPF money, but your investment portfolio is your accessible safety net. At the end of the day, the best allocation is the one that you can stick with through a crash. The fanciest strategy in the world is useless if you panic sell at the bottom. Anyway, that's all for this video. Hope you found it useful. Like, share, and subscribe as I'll be posting new videos every week.